Hello and welcome to the Loop Marketing Podcast. In today's episode, you'll hear from Kwegi's president and founder, Sean Cotton, as well as our director of innovation, Savannah Westbrock, as they define and explore the roadmap to finding your best customers. We'll discuss where brands should start when building their audience targeting strategy, ways to refine your audience with a test and learn approach, and what the process looks like to turn first-time customers into loyal, long-term advocates for your brand. Let's get started. All right. So today we are here with two of my favorite people from Kwegi to talk about what I think is a very important topic, which is how to find your next best customers for your brand. So we're joined by our president and founder of Kwegi, Sean Cotton, who, as you all have heard in the past, is a bright mind in the marketing world, a visionary, if you will, who started Kwegi about 10 years ago when automated digital media buying was very much in its infancy. And now look where we've gotten to today. We are also joined by Savannah Westbrock, who's our Director of Innovation. And so Savannah actually started off with Kwegi very much in its early days. She was one of Kwegi's first employees. And now she's holding this role to help future-proof the company by keeping a pulse on the industry-wide developments, including things like consumer privacy and the future of data collection. So welcome to both of you. So just to give us a brief overview, I mean, I think all marketers know that it's critical to have a thorough understanding of brand audiences to build successful strategies, especially in 2023. And in our last episode, we actually discussed quite a bit about the audience-centric ecosystem and how it's important to create very meaningful touch points that are authentic to those key consumers. And so, of course, what comes first is figuring out who that target audience is and what they care about. But I think that some marketers fall a little bit short because they gloss over that process of figuring out how they're going to define who these individuals are and how to scale and refine these segments over time. And without this process, they're, you know, for sure wasting those marketing dollars. And we get it. It's not always clear how to best define and cultivate these audiences for a large impact. And so I'm excited to have you all here today to talk through the process and considerations teams should go through when planning, you know, who that audience is and how we can help our clients reach their best customers. So to start us off, I'm going to start on the strategic side of things. I'd like to ask you all, where should brands start when beginning to build that audience targeting strategy? So Sean, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, it certainly is a balancing act in realizing that you want to scale your marketing, you want to reach as many potential customers as possible, but you don't want to waste your marketing dollars either. So really a great place to start is with the audience that we know, the most deterministic, most valuable customers that we do have line of sight to. Start with them, engage them, model off of them. But then we do need to expand our research with the human element as well, because there is a limited amount of first-party data or deterministic data with regards to our audience. So we have to get to know our audience beyond those deterministic data points. What are their interests, behaviors, attributes, even psychographics, things of that nature, and start building upon that original data set with those insights. It can include social listening. It can include focus group data, things of that nature. And so that's probably the best first step when we're starting to build out our strategy.
And then Savannah, I know that's something that you and your team are looking into a lot, is looking into the future of how are we going to be able to go about this research process in the midst of a cookieless future and where privacy is becoming increasingly critical. Can you talk a little bit about what you've been seeing across the industry and some ways that brands need to be thinking about building the strategy that is going to be cookieless?
Yeah, we're in this really interesting transitional time. I've been referring to the period we kind of all grew up in here at Kwegi as sort of the programmatic Wild West, because we had so much data at our fingertips that we could sort of skim through pre-built audiences and 9 times out of 10, find a third-party data set that we were really confident in. So as we shift toward consumer privacy being more of a focus, you know, not only with programmatic buying, but in general consumer technology, we're going to have to return to some of those marketing basics that we maybe neglected a little bit. So social listening, as Sean said, is a huge one, especially with social media looking vastly different today than it did, you know, even 10 years ago. But really practical tips of just putting yourself in your audience's shoes. And if something comes up in your research, like blogs they read, TV shows they watch, subreddits they subscribe to, spend a little bit of time in those spaces yourself. And I think it's going to spark some interesting ideas of different touch points you could add to your overall strategy.
And I would just add to that, which is a great point, is that we still are maintaining that data-driven approach, right? So prior to the programmatic era and data-driven advertising, oftentimes media strategy decisions were based upon hunches or what we thought we might know about our audience. And data-driven advertising has helped us take another approach with that of using information that we know, facts and data points, to inform us as to who our audience really is. And we still should have that approach. Now, we may be looking at a variety of other sources beyond what's quantitative to what's qualitative, but we still want our assumptions to be best backed up by data and audiences. And I think of a good example was some campaigns we did with Body Armor for a number of years, where obviously athletes are their target audience, goes without saying, you know, in the sports drink category. But our research showed that moms were actually a primary purchaser of Body Armor in bulk at the large retail stores and the big box stores and so forth. And so that became its whole, an entirely different audience with a different messaging strategy. But it was backed up by the data that we saw from our research and from our campaigns.
So it sounds like altogether, I mean, like you said, Sean, you want to start with what we have available to us in terms of deterministic audiences. And then we want to, you know, challenge those biases that we might have internally of who we think our audience is, or maybe just that small subset of the best audience that we think we have, but maybe there's a whole world beyond that. But then we also have to think about, you know, maybe historically what we found in terms of being a good audience from a third party perspective is going to fall by the wayside. It's not going to have the scale any longer, or it's just going to be not compliant with the regulation changes. So I think a lot of brands that I've been hearing from are wanting to figure out how they can best capitalize on first party data analysis and insights to identify those potential new customers. So Savannah, can you talk a little bit about that process and any roadblocks that you've seen brands experience or in these early stages of figuring out how to navigate a cookieless future?
Absolutely. I feel like that was the first place our recommendations went when Google made their announcement to depreciate cookies. But there have been roadblocks along the way, to your point. A lot of brands are realizing that the way they set up their point of sale systems or their website was not necessarily the best strategy for getting all of their data in one place. But especially if you have consumers who are loyal to you, who use your products, who are willing to give you things like their email address and their phone number, you want to have all of that in one spot. So whether it's a CRM system or a CDP system, you want to make sure it's in a area where we can evaluate it. And to Sean's point, let that really high quality audience determine what things we might want to experiment with as we broaden our strategies.
And then Sean, I know when we first were talking about this topic of first party data, you know, something that I think brands maybe fall short on is figuring out how to apply that data in a way that's holistically in a holistic view across multiple different channels. Can you talk about how brands should approach that to be able to bring the most value that they can to the brand?
Absolutely. Because we all are experienced to so many touch points in our day-to-day lives to where we're exposed to some sort of media or some sort of communication. that we want to really take a holistic view when we have that valuable first party data as to how broadly can we use it to gain insights for our audience. So it could be in the websites that they visit for sure. But it also could be in the influencers that they follow, the TV shows that they watch, their location patterns, and, you know, even have heat maps and so forth as to, you know, the retail chains and so forth that they frequently visit. So by taking that high level and that holistic viewpoint of how these identified valuable customers spend their day and where they devote their attention, we get a full view of how we can engage them as they are, again, exposed to so many different messages and communications every day.
And I'll add to that, Sean, that also helps us throughout the lifetime of our campaign understand how our audience is responding to our messaging. So for example, one thing a lot of Coeggy planners are beginning to do is implement a performance scoring model as a part of our measurement strategies. So using the simple example of someone in market for a car purchase, you know, if they're visiting our brand's website and maybe looking at different vehicle models, they might still be in that discovery phase. But if we know they visited the actual lot two or three times and spoken to two or three salespeople, that's a much more invested person who's a lot more likely to take that next step. So it helps us sort of retroactively look at each of those touch points along the way and the actions that grow out of them to help us understand the true value and the effects of our marketing.
And I think that, I mean, you're going right into the next step of what we're consistently doing once these audiences have been strategized and activated. It's all about figuring out, how do I measure the effectiveness of figuring out, have I found that next best customer? So you bring up the performance scoring model, which I think is critical to bring together multiple data sets to not have a biased view of how audiences are performing or how they're engaging or reacting to the message that we have out in multiple touch points. But how do you use that model to be able to build that test and learn approach, which is so critical to that process of refining and scaling audiences?
Well, one of the ways we've used it is just to empower our full team to come together, whether it's our specialists who are in the platform, our strategists, our research team, and even our clients as well. Having that proactive conversation about what each step of a consumer journey really means and how each step in our minds needs to be measured against our media. So if you have that conversation up front with all the correct people in the room, it not only informs your setup strategy, but it can help your optimization strategy. It can help you put together reports that have those really valuable insights. And overall, it's just led to more successful start to finish campaigns that we can replicate their success in the future.
Absolutely. And this approach also powers our measurement strategy and learning agenda to where, as we are researching and laying out the strategy and planning for a marketing campaign, we make certain hypotheses as to what we think will happen based upon that research and based upon that strategy. But as we closely monitor the impact of that campaign, we're proving those suppositions either correct or incorrect and making pivots. And so that test and learn approach, you know, allows us to iterate, you know, on an ongoing basis, you know, to drive the most performance.
And it's truly such a just added value of being like honest and transparent and having those real conversations with our teams and our clients up front. You know, so many times our instinct is to want to always be the expert in every piece of our campaign. But this gives us an opportunity to say, you know, going into it, this is our expectation. These are our benchmarks. But let's plan for, what do we do if this doesn't work? Or what, you know, time in our campaign might we want to pause and revisit this idea and tweak it from there?
And I'd like to hear to what extent you believe that there should be a strong human element in the test and learn process versus where do you allow the machine and AI to take over? So if I'm going to use an example, a lookalike model. So you have some sort of seed audience, whether it be website data or CRM data. And if you put it into a DSP or a social platform, we're able to look at it over time and see, okay, which attributes are gaining strength and scale, and being able to refine that seed audience to be able to find potential new people who look and behave similar to our best customers. But where do you have to tell the system to pause to figure out, hey, this may be what looks right from a cost per clicks perspective, but this isn't actually leveling up to the goals of the business at large?
Yeah, we have to understand our audience. And, you know, we work in a lot of regulated industries as well, such as finance and pharma and healthcare. And so that's been highlighted to us from the very beginning of, you know, being respectful to our audiences, understanding their sensitivities to some of their data, whether it's financial health, certainly. But that really extends to all people, all humans. And so it's really comes down to putting guardrails around that machine learning. Simple things such as frequency caps, rotations of different, or ideally sequential rotations of your creative messages to tell a story. You know, you mentioned, you know, chasing the cost per click or the click-through rate or the conversion rate. That really comes to rigor with your measurement strategy as to what is really driving growth for your brand. Or are you simply capitalizing on consumers that were going to engage with your brand anyway by hitting them over and over again, and it makes your vanity metrics, you know, look more favorable? So I think it's a combination of that. Certainly it's understanding the human element, putting guardrails in place for machine learning to respect, you know, our customers, and then having that strong, rigorous measurement strategy.
I'd also say that exactly what you just described in terms of guardrails of frequency as well as sequential messaging lends itself naturally towards figuring out, okay, how do I go from that first touch point with the customer where maybe they purchased for the first time, but they aren't necessarily loyal yet, and how to change that relationship so it is long lasting. So I know we've seen several brands take wrong turns in this, to where they are maximizing impressions of retargeting so that they're hitting them with the same message over and over, when maybe it's a product they've already purchased or something that it's been too short of a period of time since they purchased where it's no longer relevant. And so how do we avoid alienating customers from, you know, oversaturation and building a roadmap that allows that that relationship to be built over time?
Well, I love what Sean said about just making sure your audience is seen as a person, as a human. And I think one of the easiest ways to do that is to put yourself out of like your work brain mode and think, what annoys me when I get that same ad on CTV 400 times, for example? What turns like my view of a brand off, and what can we avoid in our strategy? I think as we're putting together those tactics, you want to avoid the things that rub you the wrong way as well.
I think it's important to, you know, take a fresh look at our customer base, you know, regularly. You know, we've worked with some clients in the past and onboarded some clients in the past that do have a very sizable CRM database, but just due to the complexities of managing that over time, some of those records may be years old. Right. But they're still in the same database as some of their newest customers. Well, obviously, we're going to speak to those individuals in different ways in an ideal marketing strategy. So, again, having a data strategy as to how do we refresh our customer database. We don't forget about those ones that were our customers for a long time ago. But some of them may be loyal customers that have been with us that entire time. Some of them may have lapsed. So we're going to approach them differently. So understanding the nature of our, you know, our first party audience is another way to, you know, communicate with them in an effective way.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's a need to have some rigor with your first party data, right? That you can't just set it and forget it and expect it to be equally effective even 3 months from now. I mean, people's behaviors change very, very rapidly, and their opinions of your brand will change with it. But also, to your point, being able to segment it to where if it is a lapsed customer, giving them the incentive to come back and re-engage, to re-showcase the value of the brand. And then when you do still have a customer on hand, rewarding them and thanking them for their loyalty, whether it's through something like a discount or some sort of exclusive deal or exclusive product that may not be as readily available to the general population, I think is super smart. So actually, we're at a great point where I wanted to jump into some Q&A questions from some listeners that have come in. The first one that has come to the forefront is about figuring out where to draw the line on where personalization with your audience becomes a little creepy. So how do you figure out how to build an ad or a user journey with multiple touch points to in a way that's customized to the individual or to the audience group without, feeling a little invasive? So Savannah, you want to chat a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I think, obviously creepiness is subjective for everybody, but for me, where I have felt sort of that line was crossed is when I'm getting a super personalized message from a brand that I don't remember or I'm unfamiliar with. So that speaks back to what we've hit on with maintaining and nurturing your CRM lists. I may have bought a product from this company 4 or 5 years ago and they've slipped my mind. So when I get that really hyper-targeted search banner ad or something, those t-shirts on Facebook that we've mentioned a number of times that just have my name and my occupation and my birthday on them for some reason, those things are typically when the red flag goes up because they just feel a little bit more invasive than a personalized email from a company whose products I've bought 4 or 5 times.
Perfect. And then Sean, we have a listener who, is wondering what's the process you go through to figure out your ideal audience when maybe you're a brand that's in the startup mode. You've identified the need, or at least you think you've identified a perceived need in your product or service, but where do they start to be able to build on that audience strategy?
Well, I think a good place to start is simply your website analytics. If you're a startup, you're likely going to do some sort of PR release. You're going to do some things to get your name out there, or physically, you may be doing some efforts to engage your customers, face to face. Take all of those opportunities to gather as much data as you can. So from a online standpoint, there's always your website analytics. You can drill down to a very, city level or even to portions of a city level as to where is that traffic coming from. If you have multiple pages on your website, which pages are website visitors most engaged with? What time of day are they coming to your website? So there's a number of signals there that can be a starting point for what our customers are looking like. If you are to engage, able to engage ones face to face, mentioned focus groups earlier, even if you talk to 10 people about your brand and about your startup and what you're doing, you're going to gain some insights about what the response may be at a much larger scale for your brand. So you want to record that. You want to make note of that, and then research that feedback. So that's a couple of good places to start.
There's also an opportunity in the early days to think about creative ways to incentivize people to want to get more involved with your brand or use your service more frequently. So a really common one is offering a discount if people want to sign up for your newsletter or saying, hey, we'd love for you to attend this webinar. If you found this valuable, maybe leave your business card behind, virtually, of course, on a webinar.
Perfect. And then the last question we have here is, where do you start when you're starting from scratch on gathering first party data? I mean, the first thing that probably feels a little most obvious is something like a lead generation ad on Meta. But what are some more creative ways that brands can be able to dig into what these individuals value to get a head start?
Well, this is where partnerships can really come into play. So second-party data is a great place to start. If you don't have a really robust CRM list of your own, try to look for businesses who might have really high-quality data and do your due diligence to evaluate it. But you can also look at things like retail media partnerships. You know, if you've done that sort of on-the-ground research of where your consumers shop, what kind of things they're interested in, there might be something where you can go to Target Roundel and say, okay, we know that our audience is in market for maybe some parenting items. Let's look at those wish lists and see maybe if there's a unique way we can reach them here.
You can also, those are great points, and you can also tap into your creative executions in some case. For instance, on Meta, on Facebook and Instagram, someone who watches a video all the way through can be put into a bucket that can be used as a first party audience. And then you can do lookalike modeling off of that. You can do the same thing with programmatic with video. And there's certain types of creative formats that, you know, you can gather user information within the creative format. So that's another way as well that, you know, we can start to build some of that first party data.
Great. So we're coming up on time. So it's been a really great conversation talking about how to strategize for audiences, how to figure out how to measure their effectiveness and test and learn over time so that you're continuing to maximize your ad dollars. And then lastly, figuring out how to really tap into human nature and build long-term loyal customers. But something at Kwegi that we care a lot about is transforming our brands through digital transformation, through unique insights, things like that. And so I'd love to hear your number one tip for brands who want to use audience targeting and relationship building to truly transform their brand in 2023. So Savannah, would you like to kick us off?
Sure. And I'll just return to one of, I think, is the most important things we've said today is just not forgetting that your audience is made up of people. So each member of your audience is going to have a unique relationship and a unique journey throughout their experience with your brand. So any opportunity you have to segment your grand audience into groups of people that are going to be a little bit more receptive to different types of messaging at different stages of their journey is a great way to just start thinking strategically. And from there, it can inform your channels that you want to execute on. It can inform your creative messaging. And overall, it just lays a really solid foundation from those people who are brand new to working with your brand to those loyal customers that you're ultimately hoping to build.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that, to brands that want to build relationships with their customers, is to be careful not to let our own personal biases get in the way of, you know, who identifying who those most valuable customers are. You know, I think in terms of, we've done skincare, high luxury skincare campaigns in the past. And again, the immediate assumption is, oh, our best customers are high income individuals that can afford to buy this really expensive skincare. It's just the immediate assumption. But actually, oftentimes a stronger indication of who their most valuable customers are, people who want healthy, beautiful skin. that's the most powerful signal. And that doesn't always mean they have a high income. Right? Because it's that important to them. They will sacrifice money on other things in order to have the best skincare. So to that point, not allowing biases to get in the way and maybe excluding, you know, some really valuable audiences from our communication messages and building a relationship with them.
Great. Well, thank you both for your time today. This was a great conversation.
Thank you, Elise.
Thanks, Elise.
Thank you for listening. Kwegi is an industry-leading performance marketing agency based in the Midwest. We've learned a lot since our founding in 2014 and started the Loop Marketing Podcast to share some of our hot takes on marketing trends we're following, best practices we've discovered, and actionable tips for improving your digital strategy. We'll see you next time.